Tap into the passion and vision of well-known entertainment luminaries with Thinking Out Loud. Go on a journey with unfiltered access to today's media innovators. Hear their strategy for rising above the crowded landscape. Important lessons and valuable wisdom that only comes from real industry experience.
Hello, I'm Vicki Lins, President and CEO of CTAM, a marketing organization in the media entertainment technology industry. Our latest episode of Thinking Out Loud took place at the first in-person television critics tour in 3 years. The TCA tour showcases original programming across broadcast, public television, cable, and streaming. Original content is available to consumers at a dizzying pace these days. The market has become fragmented by the arrival of new players, industry mergers, and a race to acquire IP. To succeed in this competitive environment, building consumer awareness is essential. The TCA Press Tour provides an opportunity for programmers to showcase their best original programming, talent, creatives, and executives to bolster consumer awareness. And it meets TV writers' needs for news and information. I sat down with Michael Wright, head of MGM Plus and president of MGM Plus Scripted Television. Michael oversees MGM Scripted Television's development and production of scripted programming, growing the television content slate MGM produces for distribution globally. In addition, he oversees all facets of the premium network MGM Plus, including expanding its slate of original programming, growing distribution, and leading creative and marketing efforts. We discuss their TCA presentation, their acquisition by Amazon, the rebrand from Epix to MGM Plus, and more. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did.
So, Michael, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
So for our listeners, because I'm not sure when this episode will air, you just walked off stage at the Television Critics Association
yes,
tour.
Yeah.
And we were talking a little bit about how well received the content was, which bodes well for 2023 for MGM Plus.
Yeah, I've been on that stage a few times and you're always like, wow, I hope it's a full room and I hope they ask questions. But you know what's funny is if you've done this enough, you always have a question or two.
Right.
In your back pocket.
Right.
You know, you're like, okay, I don't mind it. I'll just ask questions. But luckily today was one of those days where my hands went up and people had genuine questions to ask. And they should, because I thought these were, I mean, to be able to have that group of talent, I mean, you have Ron Howard and RJ Cutler on stage, so engaged in their show, or Alex carrying his team and the whole From group, they were fun.
So what's the question that you had in your back pocket that you didn't have the chance to ask?
Well, I always ask the producers ahead of time, what questions do you want me to ask you? That's like a cagey old veteran trick. So my question for Alex was going to be for Spy Among Friends, that the Lily Thomas character is made up in an otherwise true story. So what was the thinking behind it? Because I also knew that he had a very specific reason. And he likes to be asked that question. And so what was funny is there was a moment where I thought, all right, they're going to... And the second question was somebody said, why did you make her up?
Yeah. And I thought his answer was very interesting. He basically said, because I needed a different lens to get inside this world and help viewers better understand these people. And she provided a different depth and perspective.
Right. And some people had criticized him for being performative and all you're adding women. He goes, what, you think there weren't women working in the spy agencies? Like, what are you, dumb? So, and as you said, from a storytelling standpoint, he knew that that woman, just so beautifully played by Anna, would disarm these men.
Yes.
You put that guy who's used to being part of the old boys club in a room with that steely woman asking the right questions. And it just, it's dramatic.
Yeah.
And those scenes
and the friction and tension that it brings to the story makes
it's
it
such a good show. I'm not being a shill. It is such a good show. Sometimes they just get it right. And they really nail that one.
Well, you showcased a lot of really impressive content today. But let's take a step back because I sort of dove into that part of the conversation. But Epix is becoming MGM Plus imminently.
Yeah.
And help us understand, what does that mean? Beyond a name change, what does that really mean?
It's two things. It's sharpening the creative focus of the service for audiences. We've been programming a certain way to a certain audience for the last several years, and I'll elaborate on that in a second. But unless you're going to be Netflix or Amazon and you have the resources and the breadth to be kind of all things to all people, the game today is about identifying a specific audience, an addressable market, and programming to them. So the first part of it is about sharpening that creative focus for that audience, and I'll come back to that. But the second part of renaming from Epics to MGM Plus is awareness. I mean, I'm the first to say, no one's ever heard of Epics. If you work at Epics and you've been doing this for, I've been here for 5 years and our team has been here for a number of years, we have been, and this is how we all feel about quietly building a really great service. People will form their own opinions, but it's really good. I mean, there are the thousands of hours of curated movies chosen for a specific kind of audience. Hundreds of hours now of original series. When we got here 3 years ago, there were three series. And we've built over the 5 years a really wonderful slate of series, new and old. And there's also, even more so now, a great slate of classic movies, of older movies. And now we're leaning heavily into the MGM brand. So it's an awareness build, and it's a creative sharpening of the focus, which I think you have to succeed in a ruthlessly competitive business. And by way of backstory, you know, I'll say, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, this group, we all knew, it's like, okay, no one's ever heard of Epics. It doesn't stand for anything for anybody. What is it? And you start by looking at who's already watching. You do the research. And what you figured out really quickly was there's a certain bent to this audience. It's a little bit older. And by older, I mean over 45, which in TV terms is older. So, you know, it's a slightly older, slightly more affluent, and okay, a little more male and female audience. And they are coming and watching quality studio movies. I mean, they're not watching really the low budget stuff. They're not watching some of the indie stuff, but they're really leaning into this sort of elevated commercial fare. If this were radio, they used to call it adult contemporary. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the audience. So know who your audience is, because that's your base and you're going to grow from that.
So for years, we've been talking about the streaming wars and, yeah, you know, everybody's kind of tired of the phrase, but that game is changing. That battle is definitely shifting. And we're seeing all kinds of business decisions now that are going to shift that landscape dramatically. It sounds to me you're talking about very curated content, a laser beam focus on a very specific, yes, audience. It, yes, sounds to me like you're not tossing your hat into the ring of the more subscribers, the better, no, something for everyone, and big franchise names that are going to attract the masses.
It's funny. The cable universe came undone in part because audiences felt like, man, I'm paying all this money and I'm watching 20 channels, right? So everyone, we jumped on the cord cutting train. And for good reason, because there was a sort of a good idea had gone down an indulgent road. Yeah, we're going to charge you for 300 channels to get the 20 you really want. But now what's happened is I think people are realizing, well, there are the must-haves. Amazon's one of them. Proud to say that, you know. And then there's Netflix. And there's a handful of others. But then you have all these other really credible, good brands. There's a lot of services out there. I would say ours is one of them that are putting together great content that aren't that be all things to all people business. Those of us in that space have had to build business models that don't rely on being all things to all people. Like Epics had to, just of necessity, be built in a way that it made business sense, because we weren't going to be able to be all things to all people. We weren't going to have endless resources. So we built something that I think resembles more where the business seems to be going right now, which is it's a renewed focus on, does it make business sense, as opposed to the simple metric of growing subs? Again, I'm not pointing fingers or judging any of it, but I think there was a period of time there in the business where all that mattered was sub growth.
Yeah. It
didn't matter how much you were spending to achieve that sub growth, right, or anything else. And so now, I'm not saying anything that hasn't been published on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Everyone's now figuring,
right,
out.
And chasing people over profit, right? More, correct, eyeballs were better, but whether, right, or not they were profitable wasn't relevant yet.
Right. So now you're building a business around, okay, every show you make, it's not an after-school activity. It's how it should be. Does that show make sense? Well, I'm going to spend X amount of dollars to make that show. First, is it any good? Which should be your first metric. Is it a great show? Mm-hmm. But then, in addition to being great, is there an audience for it? Does it help us grow our business? Does it help burnish our brand? It needs to do all those things. It has to make sense.
So that's a tough order to fill.
Yeah.
How much of that needs to get attention to attract people to the service, or to have your subscribers want to stay with the service? Because we're also seeing consumers jump around a lot more now, because, yeah, they can get a taste of this and a taste of that, yeah, and instead of paying for everything all the time. So what does that part of the model look like to create the sticky factor?
There are And this is not my original thought, and I apologize in advance because I've shared this with a few other people, but I think it's fundamental to our business. When you do the research, which you should do, around why are people subscribing and why are they dropping or retaining? What are consumers looking at to make that decision? And
right.
The research that I've done and that I looked at, others might have different, but it's been the same every time when I've looked at it. There are three metrics that compel people to subscribe or keep you or drop you. It's quantity, it's quality, and it's value. Meaning, and this is not generic, how much is there? Am I subscribing to your service and there's like a handful of titles? Or is it, wow, there's a whole lot there. Quality, is it any good? I mean, do you have thousands of hours of content nobody wants to see? Or do you have like, wow, they've somehow put together a lot of really, really great content? And then value, how much are you charging me for that combination of quantity and quality?
The interesting thing about those three things is that they're all less is more. Quantity is really not about more is better.
No, it's not.
It's really about having the right amount of quantity so right. consumers feel like there's enough choice there and enough depth there.
Right.
But that dovetails right into the quality factor.
I learned this a long time ago in terms of the quality metric, because I go back to my days at CBS and then Turner. The benefit of doing this for a while is that certain things just become true. You kind of like learn them. I think most viewers are experts at watching television. And what I mean by that
yeah.
is people that might not be good at anything else in their life, they can turn on a TV show and they can do it in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Is this any good? They can make that decision. And I think similarly, because consuming home entertainment is such a central part of a lot of people's lives, they develop a skill set, a really sophisticated skill set. So my quantity, quality, value paradigm, they might not articulate it to you. They might not say, here's what I'm doing. But what I'm saying is, a good, smart consumer is going to make that decision in about 5 minutes. They're going to do your 7-day free trial. And without articulating it, they're going to go, how much is here? Is it any good? And to your point, it's not about having thousands of hours of junk. It's, do they have a lot of good stuff? And are they charging me a fair price for it? Because that's the first part of it. If you don't get that part right, I don't think you have a prayer.
Right.
But then to your point, what's sticky? Shows are sticky. You start off from a base of quantity, quality, and value with a brand that is recognizable. Oh my goodness, the gift of MGM that we got to use that name. I'm grateful every day for that. So to have that, you're in a position to succeed. Then it's incumbent upon you. You better make shows that are sticky. The other thing people, I think, that do this, you know, for a little bit, understand is it's always and forever about the shows. It's always forever about the shows. Did you make a show, find a show, buy a show that a number of people want to watch?
We're seeing a lot of renewal cancellations happening. We're seeing a lot of shows that have very short shelf life these days. We seem to have come out of the period of time where shows had 5, 6, 8, 10 seasons because people were just sticking with them. And now it's way more common. We're thrilled if a show lasts 2 or 3 seasons because it didn't go away after one. Do you have a philosophy and approach about, and of course, this is also a very creative question, and there was a wonderful conversation earlier today around this, knowing when it's time to close a show.
We talked about that a little bit with the front panel, in that I think every show will tell you when it's over. And
yeah.
we've all seen, without naming them, TV series that were like, oh man, you went a season too long. Forgive me, I'm a football fan, so this might not register, but it's like those pro athletes that should have retired a year or two before they did. And that last
yeah.
season, they're injured. And they're
and nobody's ever happy when they overstay their welcome.
It's like, you know what? I'll remember you as that all-world athlete. So the really simple and honest answer to your question is that most television shows are going to tell you when they're done. The challenge is when the show's not done, but the audience is done with it.
Mm.
You know, we talked about that today on the front panel. And that's hard because you might not have a sufficient audience to justify from a pure ROI standpoint bringing the show back. But okay, but the people that were watching it loved it. And when you yank it, that affects their relationship with your service.
Right.
So the thing that we've talked a lot about is transparency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just having an ongoing dialogue. I'm very honest. I'll tell our show winners, your show's doing great. It's, I don't know. We'll see. So that they know. Because the other thing that interesting that it's evolved over the past couple of years is in the old days, show season one ended in May. Season two was on the air in September.
Right.
By the way, how in the world did anybody ever do that? I did. So I was there. So that was right. hard. But no, I mean, sometimes I'm not saying it's good or bad thing. It's just an is. There's a year, sometimes a year and a half in between seasons. So the truth is, for not all, but for many shows, you do have sufficient time to say to people, look, this could be your last season because didn't do great last year from an audience perspective. We're creatively beloved. Let's give it another shot, but be prepared to end it if you have to.
Has there been a show that was a one season or limited series, but it turned out to be so wildly successful that you decided to give them more?
Belgravia. That was a limited series and it just did gangbusters for us.
Yeah.
And so luckily for me, Gareth Neiman is the producer. And I called him and he says, oh, I don't know. Let me call Julian. He goes, and Julian Fellows is like, well, of course there is a way to
do it. I asked that selfishly because I was a huge fan. And, you know, when it ended, I was like, please, God, make them come up with the next.
That was a series. And it was supposed to end. And yeah. I'm just very fortunate that they had a way to continue the story of Arabia, which is so cool. Yeah.
So let's just shift gears for a quick moment here. You can't talk about MGM Plus without also talking about Amazon.
Yeah.
Right. So how is being part of Amazon going to help elevate all of these lofty goals you have? And what has that integration been like from your perspective?
Look, I'm going to sound like I'm being a company man, but I'm really not. They're like, so far, super nice people. They really liked Epics and they said, let's grow it. I mean, so if you're me.
Right.
And you've been working on this thing with a team of people that become your family. And your company gets bought, and you're kind of holding your breath. You're like, I don't know what's going to happen. Well, guess what? They offered everybody a job, and they said, hey, let's grow this thing.
You know, well, and your loyal fans have got to be happy about that, too. I think people were afraid it was going to dissipate into the greater Amazon universe.
And we can talk about that, too. But just from the word go, you're like, wait, what? You guys bought us. You love Epics, and you want to go out, and you're going to let us call it MGM if we wanted to? There's not much to not
win-win,
like about
right?
that. Yeah. Then on top of that, the challenge, I've said from the very beginning, the biggest challenge of the last couple of years has been awareness. We felt that we were growing really creatively, qualitatively terrific service. Like we're proud of it. The just painstaking, the curation of the movies, the series, the brand, all of it. If you don't have sufficient resources to make people aware, it's like if a TV show falls in the forest, does anybody hear it? So that was sort of our problem the last couple of years. Well, now you got Amazon. And this is a big, successful company saying, hey, we want to help you. So to be able to use their resources and their enthusiasm to shine a light on this service, both from a marketing standpoint, but also within the Amazon world. I mean, it's literally, if you could have thought of all the different companies that could have bought MGM, who knew? But it turned out they had enthusiasm for what we're doing and the resources to help it.
They're also in the equipment side of the business and the smart TV business and Fire Stick. And so from a distribution partnership expansion type of effort, what could that look like? And growth. Do you get excited about that part of the horizon?
Yeah, because like I said, that no one is or should ever be truly satisfied in this business because the minute you are, you're going to start failing. Right. I mean, that sounds like a cliche, but it's the truth. It's always like, that was good. Not good enough. What else can we do? We're always striving to improve programmatically and creatively, but I'm okay saying we're pretty proud of like the progress we've made. But the singular frustration has just been distribution, not distribution, awareness, because we had a great team. We got here 5 years ago. Epics was available in 20 million homes. It was amazing that we're even surviving. Well, today we're everywhere. I mean, the service is distributed everywhere in the country. That was a huge mountain to climb. So we solved that problem. We've never had the resources or the leverage to go the next step because it's one thing to have good content. It's another to be fully distributed. That's not enough. You then have to be able to engage in sophisticated marketing and rely on relationships and mutual needs. And so all the things that Amazon can do. Now, by the way, we're one of many companies. We don't assume like we're the only thing they care about and we're realistic about it. But, you know, they can help and they are helping. So yes, Fire Stick and smart TVs and whatever else is out there, the way Amazon works is you just go to them. It's an interesting company. You just present to them. You say, here's what I'd like to do. And they analyze it. It's amazing. You go right in the door and you go, we think this would work and this would help. They, I think, correctly make you present it. Mm-hmm. And why? Why should we do this? One of their things is they want you to ask a lot of whys. But if your answers are sufficient and correct, I go, okay, let's go do that.
There are a lot of opportunities out there. And it's January, so it's a good time for predictions. Yeah. So give us one or two predictions or aspirations that you see on
for us,
for you.
Yeah. Growth. I think growth and awareness. I think it's my singular answer is what we're all working overtime to achieve, both because we want to do it for a while and because it's necessary, is awareness. Here's my prediction that I think that by a year from now, I hope I'm sitting somewhere in this facility and people know what MGM Plus is. I'm like, yeah, good for you guys. I mean, we're still fighting and we're scrapping and everybody has to, because this is a dog eat dog world and your survival or success is never guaranteed. But to be in the game, to go from irrelevant, we're not irrelevant today. People like now, we've made great progress. People have heard of the shows and we've kicked the door down. But my goal, my hope a year from now, is that it's only about the shows. I get asked a whole lot about the existential status of the company. Fair question right now.
Right.
I hope that we evolve to a place where, is this show going to work? Is that show going to work? Because that's the real conversation, where your existence is no longer the first question you're asked about. It's,
right,
how about this show? How about that show? How about that filmmaker? How about that actor? How about that writer? That's what I'd like to be talking about.
Well, you're largely talking to a group of marketers. And so I'm sure there'll be a profound appreciation for how much the awareness factor plays into all of these others. Absolutely.
Game. And we know it. We know. It's like, yeah, we got to solve that.
We know. Well, time is tight today. So I'm going to reserve the right to circle back and continue this conversation. And maybe when we talk again, we'll actually have some measurement to show that you've moved the needle on the awareness and you're achieving those goals.
I'll be the first to tell you.
Right, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for the time.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.